In His Grip with Dr. Chuck Betters of Mark Inc. Ministries. Today we continue with the message from our archives titled Trumpets and Bowls, Part 1, from the series Unveiling and Understanding Revelation. Each In His Grip message is designed to help turn your heart towards Jesus and to equip you to walk by faith. Let's join Dr. Betters in the sanctuary.
Verse 5 tells us the angel took the censer, filled it with fire. Well, now wait a minute. I thought it was filled with the prayers of the saints. Well, you see, those prayers are emptied out onto the throne. Those prayers are presented to the Father, and in response to the prayers of the saints, what you see happen next is the answer. God answers the prayers of His people with the events that follow when the censer is emptied and it is filled with fire. You see, it says in verse 5, He filled it with the fire of the altar and He cast it into the earth. And there were voices and thunderings and lightnings and an earthquake. You see, God's response to our longing after His kingdom is to empty the censer of all of our prayers and to fill it with the fire from His perfected altar and to cast it onto the earth. This is nothing less than the announcement of judgment upon unsaved man for their hatred against Him and for their opposition to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And what you see happen in the rest of this block is God's judgment upon unsaved men for their opposition to the gospel of Jesus Christ. And all of it is in response to the prayers of His people. All of it is in response to us who pray, Thy kingdom come, Thy will be done. And so in chapters 8 and 9, the first six trumpets are sounded. Let's take a look very quickly at the first four because they're going to sound familiar. In verse 6, it tells us, And the angels, the seven angels which had the seven trumpets, prepared themselves to sound. You see, they are the executors of judgment. And the first trumpet sounds in verse 7. The first angel sounded, and there followed hail and fire mingled with blood, and they were cast upon the earth. And the third part of the trees was burnt up, and all the grass was burnt up. Now, these are plagues that sound familiar to us. You see, when we read the book of Exodus, they sound like what happened with Pharaoh and Moses. But you're going to see that they're much more intense than that. For when Pharaoh and Moses were in conflict and the plagues were given at that time, hail and fire came down from heaven, but there wasn't anything mingled with blood. There's a greater intensity that's here. It's more severe than the seven seals. It's more severe than the four riders. And you'll see that one third is affected and not one fourth as was in the case of the seals. There's more people, there are more people affected, more destruction as we approach the end times. This shows that the progressing of the judgments of God upon the land will be very severe. This is nothing less than judgment upon the land, upon the fallen earth. Ecological judgment. Physical judgment upon a physical planet. Notice the second one, verses 8 and 9. It says, The second angel sounded, and as it were a great mountain burning with fire was cast into the sea, and a third part of the sea became blood, and a third part of the creatures which were in the sea and had life died, and a third part of the ships were destroyed. We're not talking only about ecological disaster, we're talking about maritime disaster that results in ecological destruction. Have you ever heard of so many tankers running aground, so many machines leaking their gold into the seas? We are slowly but surely destroying the earth in which we live. Plant life, sea life is being destroyed. What about the great spill that we just saw in the Middle East? What about the great spill that we saw just recently with the Valdez ship? What about all of these ecological disasters that we see more and more and hear more and more of taking place? Are these not judgments coming from God, even upon the land that has fallen from Him? So it would seem from the sounding of these trumpets. Verses 10 and 11, not even the inland waters are exempt. Third angel sounded, there was a great star from heaven, and burning as it were a lamp, and it fell upon the third part of the rivers, and upon the fountains of waters, and the name of the star is called Wormwood. And the third part of the waters became wormwood, and many died of the waters because they were made bitter. Even the skies are affected. In verse 12, it says, a fourth angel sounded, and a third part of the sun was smitten. A third part of the moon, third part of the stars. A third part of them was darkened, and the day shone not for a third part of it, and the night likewise. What are we talking about here? We're talking about ecological and environmental judgment and disaster that will get worse and worse and worse as we approach the coming of the Lord Jesus Christ. And we have an interlude in verse 13. And I beheld, and an angel was flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth, by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels which are yet to sound. You see, that word angel there is not, it's a poor translation, it's really the word eagle. It's a bird of prey to show that what is going to follow in the next three judgments, in the next three trumpets, is even worse than the first four. We're talking about land, sea, inland waters, and skies ecologically destroyed. Man's lust and greed for power resulting in the blackening of the universe. And it will get worse and worse and worse as we approach the day of Christ. But that will be nothing, nothing compared to what the bird, what the eagle announces as yet to come. And thus we begin the fifth and the sixth trumpets, or what we call the first and the second woes that this bird announces. Look in verses 1 and following of chapter 9. When we come to chapter 9, we read in verse 1, the fifth angel sounded his trumpet, and I saw a star that had fallen from the sky to the earth. The star was given the key to the shaft of the abyss. Who is this star? Well, Luke chapter 10, verse 18 tells us who that star is. That star is none other than Lucifer. That star is none other than Satan. Luke 10, 18 tells us, and he said unto them, I beheld Satan as lightning fall from heaven. This is an angel who falls from heaven. This is Satan. And Satan is the one who is going to be used of God to usher in the blowing of that fifth trumpet. This first woe, so to speak. Notice that he saw that the star had already fallen. It's a past event. John says, I saw a star that had fallen, past tense. He sees a picture of Satan in the last days. And he says that he holds in his hand the key to the shaft of the abyss. Before the coming of Jesus Christ, this place of judgment is called the abyss. After Jesus Christ comes back, it's referred to as the lake of fire. Here in this woe, Satan unlocks, listen now, he unlocks the abyss. Satan has a key, and he unlocks the abyss to let loose the creatures or the demons that are in that abyss to roam the world. We are now approaching the last days, and during that time frame, Satan is going to be given the power to take that key and to unlock hell. And when he unlocks hell, the demons that are in that place are going to have the freedom to roam the world. You listening? And so Satan unlocks the abyss, and the creatures come out. Now, we are told in Ephesians, for example, that we do not battle flesh and blood, but we battle principalities and powers and spiritual wickedness in high places. Every day we battle demons. Every day we fight the forces of evil. But I maintain to you that the ones who are locked into the abyss are not what we would call the normal, ordinary, run-of-the-mill devils and demons that we have to fight every day. I believe we're dealing with something else here. I believe we have an example of that when Jesus, if you remember, cast the demons out of the young lad. And the demons began to question Jesus and begged him. They begged him not to send them away, but they begged him to make some other course of action. You read about it in Matthew 8, beginning with verse 30. It says, some distance from them, a large herd of pigs was feeding. You remember the story? Jesus cast the demons out. The demons begin to speak to Jesus. The demons, it says in Matthew 8, begged Jesus, if you drive us out, send us into the herd of pigs. Why would they beg him to do that? Why would they beg him to do that? He said to them, go. So they came out and went into the pigs, and the whole herd rushed down the steep bank into the lake and died in the water. You see, I believe we're dealing with a special legion, a special force, if you will. But I want you to notice that to Satan, the key in verse 1, the key is given to him. It's not a key that he pulls out of his back pocket. It's not a power that he has within himself. It is a key that God gives to him. Friends, let's not forget something. Hell was not created by Satan. It's not his abode that he likes to go to. The abyss is not a place that Satan loves to be in. Hell was created by God. God created hell, and he is the one who holds the key. He is the one who unlocks the abyss, but now he gives that power to Satan. He is given that power to unlock the abyss, and out of the abyss come these demons. Now, I want you to notice verse 2. When he opened the abyss, smoke rose from it like the smoke from a gigantic furnace. The sun and the sky were darkened by the smoke from the abyss. Now, it's interesting to note that in the context of the first four trumpets that speak of ecological disaster, when hell is unlocked in the fifth trumpet, smoke fills the sky. The sun is darkened. We see a piggybacking effect, if you will, upon the environment. There's no need to allegorize verse 2. There's no need to look for some other symbol there. I believe we are talking about a literal darkening of the sun and a literal darkening of the sky, but its place of origin is the abyss, right out of hell, right out of the pit, as the result of this demonic activity. Then notice verse 3. It says, and out of the smoke, locusts came down upon the earth and were given power like that of scorpions of the earth. They were told not to harm the grass of the earth or any plant or tree, but only those people who did not have the seal of God on their foreheads, that's the unsaved. They were not given power to kill them, but only to torture them for 5 months. And the agony they suffered was like that of the sting of a scorpion when it strikes a man. During those days, men will seek death, but will not find it. They will long to die, but death will elude them. You know, as I began to study the physical description of these demonic locusts, I looked first of all at their physical description. They're horse-shaped. They wear crowns of fake gold, iron breastplates, faces like men, long flowing hair, teeth like lions, tails like scorpions. I want to tell you, when you put that physical description together and you realize what the symbols are in each of those things, these locusts represent all that is enticing and appealing and pleasurable to man. All of it. They play on the lusts and the passions of men, the enticement of the hair, the power of the teeth, the quest and the lust for strength, and yes, even the intelligence. but they play on the lust and the passions of men, and these locusts will delude men into believing that war, listen now, and power and hatred will bring utopia and joy. I think you see what I'm getting to. At least I hope you do. You'll note their chain of command. It's the prince of the abyss. It's the angel who's fallen from heaven. It's Lucifer. It's Satan who is the commander-in-chief of these locusts. And they entice men to follow after their lust for passion and greed and power and war and blood. In their tail is their destructive power. They do not touch the grass as a normal locust would. Their mission is not to destroy earth, so to speak. Their mission is to destroy and to torture men. They're bent on unsaved men. They're after the lost men of the world to maim them and to torture them. How many of us will ever forget, if we spend any time around the TV set just recently, watching the atrocities that took place in Kuwait City? Eyes were being plucked out of people's heads, ears being cut off, fingernails ripped off, fingers cut. One woman had an axe taken to her head, and it was sliced in three pieces, and she was thrown out into the city, and no one was allowed to touch her for 3 days while her body rotted. Raping and pillaging and torture and maiming. And you have to sit back and ask yourself, how could another human being do that to another human being? And there's only one answer you could come up with. There's only one conclusion you could ever draw from something like that. It is nothing less than demonic activity of the last days. I believe that the shaft has been opened. I believe what we have seen in the past 6-7 months is but a snapshot of the activity that for days and months and years to come is going to get worse and worse and worse. Please do not be deluded or deceived into believing that because the war in the Middle East is over, that the crisis of hatred and hostility has ended, because it hasn't. What you saw happen in the pillaging of Kuwait, what we saw happening with the Iraq War, is but a snapshot of what will take place in the end times, and you'll see that as we go on. The locust plague, in their tail is their destructive power. And how long do they do it for? 5 months. You say, what's the 5 months? That's the lifespan of a locust, beginning to end. From the beginning when that creature is let out of hell until the end when God locks him back up into the abyss and casts him into the lake of fire and seals him there forever. From the beginning until the end, he will seek to torture and maim and destroy and capitalize upon the greed and lust of people like Hussein. And there will be more just like him. We're already talking about the fella in Syria, another Saddam Hussein. And there will be more just like him. You say, how do you know that? Well, just stop and think for a moment. Look at all of the torturing and maiming that went on in Kuwait City. There are hundreds, there are thousands of men just like Saddam Hussein. And they would do anything to be in the position of power. Why? Because they are demon-possessed. Hell, I believe, has been unlocked. All of their empty promises that the locusts make to entice men to follow them in their quest for power and pleasure, where does it end? It ends in torture on the rack of gloomy pessimism. One reporter, I got choked up when I heard this. I mean, there was a, I don't know who he was, I didn't remember the name, But he had just been out into the field over in Iraq. And they were flying him back to his home base. And he was in a helicopter. And he says, and the helicopter was going about 200 miles an hour over the desert sands. And he looked down and he saw a lone bunker there in the middle of the desert, a hole in the ground. And he says, and one lone Iraqi soldier, when he saw the helicopter approaching, climbed out of that hole and began to furiously wave a white flag. And as the helicopter went by him, his hands went into the air and he dropped to his knees and he was literally begging the helicopter to save him. A picture of all the promises of demon-possessed people. Power-hungry, torturing, robbing, pillaging, raping people. All of the empty promises that those thousands and thousands of Iraqis were given by a man like Saddam Hussein come to nothing. They come to naught. Thousands of people killed. Thousands of people died. For what? A demon-possessed leader comes right out of the smoke of hell. Verse 7 tells us the locusts looked like horses prepared for battle. On their heads they wore something like crowns of gold, and their faces resembled human faces. Let me decode some of the symbols here for you. First of all, the whole idea of these locusts looking like horses can be only interpreted one way. Horses all the way through war machines. The more horses you have, the greater your war machine. So the horses are symbolic of war machines. Man amassing war machines around himself. Weapons of mass destruction. And on their heads they wore something like crowns of gold. Fake wealth. Not real wealth, not shared wealth, but fake wealth. Wealth that is possessed by the demon-controlled leader. But not wealth that is shared by the masses of the people. They will only eventually be destroyed. They will only be ripped apart by the war machine. Verse 8 tells us that their hair was like woman's hair, enticing and alluring. You have to wonder when you sit back and you watch these reports, you say, how could these people follow him? How could these people be so deluded and so deceived? Because he's enticing. He has the flow of the woman's hair, alluring but fatal, just like Delilah was fatal. Alluring but fatal. Promising utopia, what do they usher in? Hell and pessimism. Just like all the Eastern religions of the world. Just like the Hindus and the Buddhists and all of the other cults that have made their way over into the Western world. What do they promise? Nothingness. Utopia. You can sit there and fold your legs from now until you're blue in the face. You can sit there and read all of the books and meditate as much as you want. You will never find peace and joy and comfort until you come to know the Prince of Peace, Joy, and Comfort, our Lord Jesus Christ. And we promise, the world promises utopia. These religions promise us peace. What do they give us? Pessimism, hell, destruction, and sore legs. Verse 9 says, they had breastplates like breastplates of iron, and the sound of their wings was like the thundering of many horses and chariots rushing into battle. You see, this breastplate here portends invincibility. The wings, countless and endless noises of war, never content with one war. When one war's over, they go into another one. When that one's over, they rush into another one because the wings are constantly flapping. 8 years of fighting a bunch of teenagers in Iran wasn't enough for Saddam Hussein. He could only make 10 miles of progress inside the country of Iran, fighting a bunch of young kids from Iran. So he decided to take on the world's number one power. And all the way through this, I kept saying to myself, who in the world does he think he's up against? But his hatred and his venom and his power and his greed. His wings just keep right on flapping, never content with peace, always lusting for more and more control. Verse 10, they had tails and stings like scorpions, and in their tails they had power to torment people for 5 months. Painful, devastating, burning dread, hopelessness, robbing men of all that is the light, robbing men of all that is true righteousness, holiness, and the joy of Christ. Why? Why do they do that? Because verse 11 tells you why. Their king is the king of the abyss. This is nothing short of demon possession at its best.
Thank you for listening to In His Grip, a ministry of Mark Inc. We just concluded part two of the message titled Trumpets and Bowls, Part One, from the series Unveiling and Understanding Revelation. You can download this sermon at www.markinc.org. At markinc.org, you'll find numerous free resources that offer help and hope to the hurting. You can also safely give online to help keep In His Grip on the air. Thank you in advance for your support.